All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy. All right, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. We are live this week. We've got Lonnie's away taking care of reality. So we've got me. Sorry. Voice of Reason, Ken, thank goodness.
Hey.
He's really sensible, you know. And last but not least, Marcus Almighty Mark. Sorry, you ended up at the tail end there after a nice intro for Ken. I want to thank everyone for joining us live. Ronnie Parker, Austin Newland, Bill Phelps, the Opal Archive, Adam, North Carolina, NC, Thomas Altop. Aaron from Down Under, you guys got Motley Crue'd Dogs of War already, and God, that's fucking awful. I don't like it, but there we go. I'm just gonna have to play Too Fast for Love and Shout at the Devil, because I can guess you can never go back in time and try and be. But you know what? The positive of that new Motley is it is at least new music. So better than nothing. And Mick Mars has a new solo album out. So all these groups that are still putting out new music, well, take it for what it is and enjoy it that it even exists, because it's not as easy as I guess you might say. Brent Milhouse, Rick Friel from Seattle. Nice and rainy. We'll be talking about the Gene Simmons solo show. We're going to be talking about some other current topics of the day. But first and foremost, Demons of Rock Volume 5 is now available for order from Kiss on Tour, 74-83.com. Go to Facebook. You can find Alan and Perstrid there. For ordering details, there's a post on the FAQ about it. It's 1,300 US and Canadian, I believe, magazine covers in this issue. But check out their own. Actually, I've got it here. It was on my phone earlier. The ultimate collection of Kiss magazine covers from Canada and USA. 150 color pages, 1,300 plus covers. So they've also got the newsletter that comes in addition to it for those who are so inclined. And copies of the previous newsletter are also available. Rick, yes, I agree. The only version of Too Fast for Love worth listening to is the leather one. I was fortunate to have a copy of the cassette, the leather cassette.
See, have the vinyl.
Hey, I don't want pops and crackles. My copy of it sounds better than the version that
they put out. It's in great shape.
Well, the one that they put out on the music to crash your car.
I bought it actually in a record store.
Okay.
Brand new.
Yeah.
Back in the early days.
In between seeing them three
shows. Yeah. Meanwhile, I was doing that too.
Jeez. Yeah. All right. So we'll get into all that. Mark, you got your CDs in, didn't you? Because I saw a Project Gemini update video. So do you just want to show that off as well and just tell everyone about
it? There it is.
So I got these in a couple of days ago. I'm extremely, extremely happy with them. They turned out excellent. The artwork is fantastic. I love the work that Jason Pollan did is outstanding. I believe he's known as Where's Drago on the board. I believe that's Jason. We've never really solidified that yet if that's him. But
is he Welsh?
He's from Wales. Yeah.
Okay.
So we've never really clarified that, but it doesn't matter. I talked to him on, he's on the Yes one as well. This is the inner booklet that comes with it. Again, he did a fantastic job with the artwork for it. I love how he did the discography now. It's nicely displayed inside the booklet. And the big thank you list here with all the people, including my fellow FAQers, are mentioned in here as well, as always. Did you even realize that, Ken, that you've been mentioned in like almost every single one of the thank you booklets?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it before. Yeah.
Okay,
good. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course, man. You're my brother, man. Come on, what do you think? Yeah. So it's available. It's I believe it's $10 to get a CD plus shipping, obviously. And shipping CDs are not that brutal right now for shipping costs. So if you haven't gotten a chance yet to grab one, just go to the Bandcamp page for Project Gemini. It's spelt this way. Just make sure, keep your eye on that spelling. And there's only one band on Bandcamp with that name, so you won't be deceived by another band. Should be easy to find. Yeah, exactly.
Show that discography page again, Mark.
Okay, I'll show the discography. Yeah, because
a lot of records.
And this is album 8, and number 9 is already ready to go, and number 10 is just about done too. So, I've been working a lot on records lately. So, when Jason showed this to me the first time, the first thing I thought of was like the Kiss programs and the Rush program that I had that had those in the back, all the album covers on the back that showed there. So, Jason's a big fan of Kiss. He posts all the time his record collections and all his collectibles and stuff like that. So I wasn't surprised when he started working with me doing this stuff that he would have some influence and, inspiration from those albums from the past. So, yeah. So thank you for the comment there. Rome loves Dan. So there's a record. If you're interested, grab a copy.
Yeah, and listen to the music while you're at it. How about that?
Exactly. And the records, I'm very happy with it. David Donnelly appears on one of the songs. He plays bass on the second track on the album. And it turned out really, really well. And just to let the people know who are going to be buying the vinyl or who have bought the vinyl, the guy who cut my lacquers for me said that this is the best sounding Project Gemini album he's heard, because it's within that beautiful window of like 17 minutes a side cut. So it sounds absolutely fantastic on vinyl. So you'll be very pleased if you bought the vinyl.
Cool. Well, great news. All right. So what other news before we get into the Gene Simmons topic? New York City rejected the proposal to rename a street corner after Kiss, which really seems a shame, because maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't come out of their gilded towers and put down their frappuccinos long enough to find out that there's always people on that corner and they're not hookers.
Yeah,
they're Kiss fans taking each other's photos. You go to that corner, people will say, "Hey, you like Kiss? Yes, I love Kiss. Here, let me take your photo. What, so you can stand with your girlfriend or your friends by that." It's always been the place to go when any Kiss related events happening in New York City. It's on the front of the Dress to Kill album cover. Obviously, we're emotionally attached to these places much more than the band is. And obviously much more than your average New Yorker is, who won't know where the Loft was or care, won't care where the waterfalls were, won't care where Madison Avenue all coin offices were, won't care about any of the locations where things formerly were. But that street corner is really significant, and it just seemed odd that it's not seen as contributing enough to Chelsea. The Chelsea district, I guess, is where it's located. I just don't know New York City and don't want to know New York City enough to know the little territorial pissings that go on there when we have all of that here for ourselves. But is there a place that would be more significant in New York City, in your opinion, where there should be something commemorating Kiss? Or did they get out of town so fucking fast that, they kind of left? But I don't think any of them still maintain any meaningful connection with New York City. Ace and Peter, both New Jersey, I think. Ace went to Connecticut, where everyone else was in the late 70s, 79, or 80, I think. Gene went to Hollywood. Paul went to California. Eric Carr, I think, stayed in New York. Ken, anywhere else that you would say stick a plaque and put the damn Kiss logo on? So that
rename the Brooklyn Bridge to the Kiss Bridge.
Brooklyn Bridge.
They call it the Kiss Bridge. The corner seems like the place. The Loft area doesn't seem like really a. Like, what are you going to put? Kiss was here, or whatever. I can't really think of any other places, they can put something into the, like the Walk of Fame thing. They could put something in front of, Electric Ladyland into the cement, something about Kiss. But
Kiss would be far down the list at Electric Ladyland.
Well, yeah, there's a long list of artists, yeah. Of course. Jimi Hendrix, number one, right?
There. Yeah, he would be first,
but,
yeah.
But I don't know. The Corner seems like, you know, a simple, easy one to do, but they obviously rejected it. So I just said the Brooklyn Bridge, because they, you know, they played at the base of it or whatever, you know, that MTV thing. Whatever. It's okay. It's the, you know, Kiss has been treated that way through their whole career. So what's the difference?
Yeah, no, there is no plaque at the street corner, but there is lots of garbage. And Andy Moyen, everyone who knows Andy, when he does his tours and whenever he has gone there, he has actually cleaned the lamppost. I mean,
cleaned it.
That's devotion. Right there.
He has some Clorox wipes.
Clorox wipes. So
there you go.
No, I think Andy is someone who cares about these places. Clearly, more than New York cares about it.
They Mark, don't care.
If you got to pick somewhere to honor and Kiss, do they deserve it in New York City, or is it irrelevant?
Well, I mean, of course it's relevant. I mean, that Kiss, you know, that's their hometown. I mean, look at the big brouhaha they made when they were doing the final show in Madison Square Garden. Apparently, New York City was all in on Kiss then, right? So, I mean, I think that that's the best place they could have had it. I mean, besides the fact that a lot of the other places that were associated with them are no longer there, so it is probably the one place that would make the most sense. The only other place I could think of that would make sense, but that's not there anymore either, it would be Cobo Hall in Detroit. That's not there anymore either, so you can't do that. But, I mean, at the very, very least, there's at least some sort of significant representation in Cadillac, Michigan. At least they have that there for a Kiss, you know, that whole thing that went up.
That's true.
So that's definitely a nice tribute to the band. And at least, you know, that shows to you how much that, you know, the blue collar middle America loved Kiss, that they were willing to even go ahead and do that on their own in a town like Cadillac, Michigan, to put up something to represent Kiss. You know, they should have definitely did the same though on that street corner, because what would that have really have cost the city? It would have been peanuts for them. Just make a nice little sign hanging up there and there you go. But, you know, I know what Julian mentioned the last week there is that we probably have numerous robberies of the sign throughout the times that they ever did do that. But, you know, but if Kiss fans were smart, sure. Which, you know, I'm not saying you guys are dumb, but I'm saying that, you know, if they were smart, they would leave it alone, because then they would never put it back up again. You know what I mean? You got to
think.
Maybe
they just don't
ahead.
Want Kiss fans congregating on the corner. They think Kiss fans
troublemakers
show up.
But I mean, they still do it anyways. You know, what trouble has there been? You know,
that's what I like in England, is that the National Register, I think it was, or I don't know what it's called these days, because they've rebranded everything with idiotic names. Put up little blue things. Paul McCartney lived here. John Lennon lived here. David Bowie, you know, brushed his teeth here. Freddie Mercury was here.
And there's also, being in the Yes podcast, there was a plaque unveiling at one of the very first venues that Yes, I think it was either they rehearsed at this place or it was actually the very first venue that they played on. And it's a restaurant, an actual still operating pub. And there's a plaque down there where they have, you know, Yes appeared here at the following. I mean, England is great for that. They recognize, you know, the artistic community within the country there, and they do what they do to help support them. Yeah, Bob Ezrin was there. Yeah, but you know, I think it's important to do that, and I think that America misses the boat a little bit with that. You know?
Yeah, maybe it's just a cultural difference that it appeals to me as an English guy, because I've grown up around it, always seeing you know. Pop culture commemorated in an assortment of ways. I mean, going into Liverpool back in the day, it's just Beatles everywhere. But, you know, I would hear it from my parents as well, you know, and my aunts and uncles who all lived around there at the time that the Beatles were playing clubs. So, you know, it's just part of my DNA from that perspective. I mean, maybe Kiss really doesn't need the recognition, because we as fans know it, and people like Andy live it and have always celebrated it whenever given the opportunity. So, you know, a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame membership is a nice trinket, but having lived the life that got them there and lived the life that got them to where they are today, they were transfigurated into avatars, you know. Unless they could take it to the bank, maybe it just doesn't mean anything. So let's move on into, you know, some of the other topics. And there was one that really kind of pissed me off. And it was, where did Tommy go wrong with the fan base? And I was like, oh, my God, not this shit again. I immediately was thinking, you know, where did the fan base go wrong with Tommy? I actually liked Tommy Thayer. And I know there's a certain amount of stigma attached to him wearing Ace's makeup, whereas Eric Singer was given more of a free pass when he adopted Peter Criss's makeup under those circumstances for which he did, when both of these guys made business decisions about that makeup and walked away from it. What the fuck were Gene and Paul going to do at that point? But Tommy Thayer, I think, gets a lot more short end of the stick because of his association with Black and Blue, you know, basically a third rate. Sorry, Tommy, but the reality is that they never made it. And they were a dime a dozen LA type band back in the 1980s. And yeah, there's plenty of songs that I do enjoy. And then was their road manager. So, and played in a tribute band, whereas Eric Singer had been a legitimate member of the band out of makeup in 1992 through 96. So take that subject, Mark. Where did Tommy Thayer go wrong with the Kiss Army and with the fan base? Because with that small minority of the fan base.
I'll tell you where he went wrong. He didn't go wrong anywhere. The fan base went wrong because here's the thing. And I'm looking at you people square in the eye. Okay. You. Okay. Don't tell me for 1 second that if those guys went up to you and let's say you were working within the organization or whatever, and they knew you were a guitar player and could do the job decently, and they went to you and said, listen, you know, I don't know, whatever, Charlie, you know, we need you to be the replacement. Ace bailed on us. We need another guy in there. You know, don the makeup. You'll get paid $1 million a year to do it, blah, 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 blah. And that's it. Don't tell me for 1 second you wouldn't do it. You're a fucking liar if you're saying that you wouldn't do it. Because I guarantee you, unless you're a moron, you wouldn't take that. You would take that job in a heartbeat, okay? Because and hey, Tommy did nothing wrong, man. He was professional. He showed up. He played the stuff properly every night. Every night he played that stuff. From the videos I've seen, I've never seen him botch stuff. I've seen Gene screw up lyrics. I've seen Paul miss cues. I've seen all kinds of stuff happen. You know, I've even seen Eric Singer miss a cymbal hit or whatever. But Tommy Thayer, I've rarely seen him do anything, you know, that was worth mentioning on a board. Like, oh my God, he played so shit tonight. He was fantastic. He did his job, and he is respected within the music community as well. No company who didn't respect him wouldn't give him a contract for his own signature amp, signature guitar. Okay. Was interviewed numerous times on like guitar, you know, magazine podcasts and all these different things. The guy is a stand-up guitar player. You know, Julian said that they didn't make it. Back in my day, it's like an old fart. Back in the times when I was in a band, you know, to us, getting signed to a record contract was one of the first steps of saying that you made it. Because lots of bands, there are thousands of bands that didn't even get a record contract. Black and Blue did pretty good, all things considered, since there were a million zillion other bands that sounded exactly like them. Hey, they got a deal. They got to go out and play. You know, there's nothing to be ashamed about with them. Lots of other bands didn't get either.
They got John Kalodner. They got the attention of John Kalodner.
That's what I mean.
They had Bruce Fairbairn produce their album. And then I believe John Bon Jovi said it was because of his production work that they wanted him for their album.
And that's the thing. Just to wrap up my point here, just with all those things that we just mentioned and stuff, you know, that's not going to come to some schmo that doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Okay, he's obviously a good guitar player. He's a, and you know, he obviously knows what's going on as far as, you know, what's required to play that position. And the main thing is to keep Paul and Gene happy. And obviously he did that in multiple positions in that band, as we had mentioned already. And Val's comment here, Mark, would you dress up like Ace? Yes, I would do it in a fucking heartbeat. And I bet you I could probably do it pretty good. I can play Ace's stuff. If I had as much time to rehearse with them as they did and, you know, go over the songs and do it, I could do this stuff. I'm not going to say it's perfectly like Ace, right, or whatever, or sound exactly like Ace. But, you know, I did have my own style and do it, and I would do it. But why wouldn't I try it, you know? Because it would be something that would, you know, make you, you know, get into the spotlight. It could help your career in many other ways, just like it helped his. So who'd be a fool not to go and do it?
Yeah, I want to just take another one of Val's comments. It's too easy. The makeup was more than a character. Yes, to us. But Ace sold it.
Yeah,
it was only it had been reduced to being a commodity at that point. So I think we have to look at two sides of the coin, or the other side of the coin on this is that if they weren't able to use it legitimately because of their arrangement, their business deal with Ace for whatever it is, and I have no idea what it is. I would love to know. You know, just how his was a different deal than what Peter had done when he, you know, obviously sold his business interest because it was apparently different. I think Three Sides did a discussion on that, actually. So it wasn't, I mean, that's just the emotional answer, is it was more than a character. Yeah, we love Ace. We love Ace nearly falling down. Is he going to stay vertical? Is he going to fall down? Is he sloppy and just doing those monster bends? It's fucking awesome. That's the music as it should be. But no, it was just a commodity. Ken, bring some reason into this conversation. Damn it, man.
No, I mean, I agree with everything Mark said. Tommy, again, we're probably talking a small group of Kiss fans. You know, I never had a problem. Sure, I would have loved to have had Ace continue and so on. But I understand, you know, well, if he's not going to be with them, he got to get somebody. And yes, he's wearing the Ace makeup. And sure, I would have rather them have had, you know, new makeup, but I'm okay with them using it. I understand the business side of things, or selling, you know, marketing and so on of that. You know, Tommy would have taken a lot more flack if he didn't play Ace's solos good. You know, imagine that if he started, didn't even, you know, if it didn't even represent Ace's solos, kind of in a way like some of the, you know, the Vinny stuff, you know, some of that stuff was not, you know, not close. I know Bruce made his own, did his own take on it, and that's always seemed to be accepted by most Kiss fans, though I still would have liked, you know, closer to the original solos that Ace did. But having said that, you know, Tommy was spot on the solos, and I'm happy that he did that because that's an integral, you know, part of their songs. Those solos, they just, you're so used to hearing them, and you hear something different, like what are you doing, kind of thing. So, Tommy, yes, stand up guy, nice guy. Met him, you know, when I was with Julian in Oakland.
That was fucking cool.
That was a great night. Got a picture with him, you know, and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I don't see why people just can't accept it. I mean, you just gotta. It is what it is, and I've always been fine with it. Really, should be fine with any Kiss fan, really.
Yeah,
he didn't do anything. He didn't. Luck. Tommy didn't do anything to you guys, so.
Tommy Thayer did not piss in anyone's cornflakes. Tommy Thayer was a fan, a Kiss fan in 1974. Eric Singer was a Kiss fan in 1974. You know what? Without those guys, I wouldn't have seen the majority of the shows that I was, you know, blessed to see from Kiss. So I've got nothing against them, though. I did used to obviously joke about Eric as Carbon Kitty, and, you know, Tommy as Fake Ace. just because they weren't sure. The guys, but the guys who walked away for their reasons.
Right.
There we are. So I didn't like that topic. let's talk about Gene. So Gene has put together a new solo band featuring Brent Woods. He played with Sebastian Bach and Vince Neil. Well, one of those is a good advertisement, I think, because Sebastian's bands have always been excellent. Actually, so have Vince's, for that matter. It's just the singer that this is the issue for the Vince bands. Brian Tichy, who's been all over the place, a foreigner, White Snake. I think he may have done some drum work with Ace for Behind the Player. I can't remember if that was him or someone else. Jason Walker. I've got no idea who that is on guitar. So if anyone out there knows, I think he does the Vegas scene. He's certainly done some band work out there, but I haven't found any bands that he's been a member of to say anything about. So Gene did the first solo post-Kiss solo show as part of the Rock and Brews show up in Illini. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's a Illini casino resort up in Portland, Washington. And I nearly went. I just couldn't justify the amount of time off. I was like, I'm going to fly up just in case he doesn't come to California, because the rest of his dates now, I think, are he's got Brazil tomorrow night or South America somewhere. And then he's doing Europe. So enjoy those shows. But the set list, of course, has become a topic of discussion. Yes. So, Mark, before we go, we're going to go song by song as yay or nay, and then we're going to dump to add to only two, because we're not doing a wholesale mention about this set.
Okay.
But the first question is overall, Mark, is that the sort of set list that you expect from a Gene Simmons solo band experience, were he to come to Toronto and be within spitting distance of you and you actually go?
Okay.
For free.
I'll preface this by saying that I did watch about 95% of it. There was a lot of it online. So I watched numerous songs on there. I think the only song I didn't see was Are You Ready? For some reason I couldn't find a video of that, but everything else I found a video of. And I thought that it was pretty predictable, the set list. The fact that he had Are You Ready in there and Weapons of Mass Destruction, I mean, those are the only two songs that were really solo songs of his. The rest of it was Kiss stuff, you know. I mean, and I know, okay, Gene was a core member of Kiss, so of course he's going to play Kiss stuff, but why? I mean, you know, when people go out on solo tours, I'd like to think that they would play a little bit more of their actual solo material. I know Ace is guilty of that as well, that he doesn't play a lot of his solo stuff. He plays a lot of Kiss stuff. But, I mean, you know, this is the thing that I don't get. I mean, Why not do those songs? I mean, this is your opportunity to play something from, you know, your 78 solo record, or play something from, you know, whatever, Asshole, or something from your box set or something. I mean, you know, you played two songs.
He played two songs. Destruction.
Big deal. That's nothing. So what? But that's nothing. That's not a solo show. That's just him doing, like, he might as well have just joined a Kiss cover band or a tribute band, jumped on stage with them and played with them. So, I mean, and he did a Motorhead song, which he looked so uncomfortable with. What are you watching? He's like looking around like, am I in the right spot? Like, he looks so out of place on that song. Shouldn't have did that one. And you know, and not to say this ahead of time, I know we're going to go song by song, but it has to be said, and I'll be just really quick about it. That was absolutely the most disrespectful version of I Was Made for Loving You I've ever seen in my life. Him bringing those women up to do it was a complete slap in the face to Kiss fans, and I'm going to leave it at that.
All right, so your rating for the set overall is a thumbs up?
Thumbs down.
Oh, okay. Okay. Ken. Are you still processing, Marks?
No, that's fine. I'll talk when we go through the songs, but as far as the set list, it's a thumbs down for me. Definitely thumbs down. When looking back at when he did his Gene Simmons Band tour before. Comparing that to this is it's a thumbs down.
Well, he has often brought up fans to sing "I Was Made for Loving You," and you know, maybe that's just up in the set too far. And certainly when I went to Edmonton, I was front row, I believe, and I could have gone up on stage had I not been bootlegging recording the show. So I don't actually mind him taking fans up. I just wish he wouldn't take fans up on stage, because I just can't get over thinking about Dimebag and how there's so many fucking nutcases out there these days that inviting people up on stage just seems really ill-advised.
But it's so amateur hour too, doing that, you know?
Let me just say this. I don't know who the heck, someone must have told them to do that kind of a set list, or it was a lazy thing. I don't know. I hope it's not the set list going forward. I hope it changes at some point to what hopefully most of the people that want to see Gene Simmons want to see him play, the songs he did. Because what I saw yesterday was a Kiss tribute band.
Yes,
that's what I thought it was—a Kiss tribute band. The way it was played, and that was disappointing. He doesn't have to be Kiss. You're Gene Simmons now. It's the Gene Simmons Band. That's the name of the band. You need to be the Gene Simmons Band. Play Gene Simmons music. What the heck are you playing? Why are you playing so many Paul songs? What the heck with that? You should have just one. Paul Stanley, on his two tours, one back in 89, he didn't do one Gene song. He didn't do one Gene song either on his live tour, you know, what was it? The One Live Kiss stuff. He didn't do Gene, you know, he didn't do it. So what's that? Why do you need so many Paul songs on there? It's like a tribute to Paul or something. I don't get it. So anyway, there's a lot of songs.
And you know what, Ken? Honestly,
been stuck in there. Yes.
You know, and this was a great opportunity for him to do it, because he played in like a kind of club situation where the audience was there for him, right? It was Mark. There was nobody else there except there was no other act except him. Now, when it comes to these festivals, he might be right to do this kind of a set list, because maybe that audience is going to be more there for other bands, and to keep their attention, he might be smart to do the Kiss material. But that's, you're right, Paul, he should probably do more of his Gene stuff than the Paul stuff. But, you know, that was his chance to do Paul, his own material. You know, in an environment where there's no other band, it's just his show, and people are expecting Gene stuff. Now in a festival, you're going to lose that opportunity. No one's going to want to hear Weapons of Mass Destruction or Are You Ready? Because they're going to be like, I'm going for a beer. Because they don't know half of this shit, these other people that are there for all these other bands that are there that night, you know?
So maybe, aside from those festival, that type of thing, that maybe the set list will change. If he ever does a tour in late August or September or something, and it does it in the U.S., maybe if it's in clubs or something like that, maybe he'll then switch the set list up to include songs like Charisma, Plastercaster, Christine 16, Watching You, Love Them and Leave Them, Almost Human, Rock and Roll Hell, Radioactive, See You Tonight, World Without Heroes, Unholy, and Domino. So anyway, I'm just, you know, going off on that. I just didn't like it. I just thought it was ridiculous, but whatever.
Okay.
And maybe so, you're right, Paul.
That was a thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, yes.
I'm gonna give it a thumbs down emotionally, just because, you know, there's songs I much would have rather have heard, and obviously I've seen him do better sets than that. But the reality is Kiss is over, and people are now going to expect to see Kiss type songs in these sets, just like Ace changing his set list to include more Kiss songs now that Kiss is done. That is the reality of, you are still seeing the originators of that music perform that music. So that's why I think it crosses over. I agree. Way too many.
Those other songs are Kiss songs. They are Kiss songs. The Gene songs are Kiss songs.
No, they are, but you have to now play the more recognizable.
You have to
stuff.
Play Lick It Up.
Come on. Yeah. Well, when Tommy Thayer's there and guesting on guitar, you know, it's a perfect opportunity to play Lick It Up. And it's also, you know, again, Gene is 70, going to be 74 years old, 75 years old.
35.
Yeah. You know, so he needs to pace himself and take breaks from singing. And maybe his guys don't sing. I mean, it was kind of hard to hear on the YouTube stuff. But we love these songs. We are Kiss fans. We profess to love the majority of the Paul, Kiss catalog.
The Paul vocals for the singing for the Paul songs, I didn't care for it. They need a better singer. Anyway.
Yeah, but I think there needs to be a better balance. But I think the reality is a vast majority of these, you know, festivals now where he is going, that people, these aren't in conjunction with the vault anymore. This isn't 2018. This isn't 2017 anymore. He is now filling a different market than those he was doing when he was doing these in conjunction with the vault or with Comic Cons. It's a completely different paradigm.
Well, they ruined I Was Made for Loving You. I mean,
well, I don't care if they ruin I Was Made for. That's a fucking peace song.
Why would they do that to a big audience? I hope they didn't do that.
Because Gene likes audience participation and bringing up people to do
it's
that.
It's nice to have participation. Yeah.
It's a lark. So I did prepare some stats for this conversation.
Oh. Ooh, okay.
Taking a look at the December 2023 Kiss set list, 11 of the songs Gene performed in his 18-song set were performed at the last Kiss show. So I say that is too many. 11 songs, regardless of me just saying that it's the new reality, blah, blah, blah. That's too many. Someone said God of Thunder is a good Paul song for him to do. Yeah, I agree.
There you go. Yeah, that's one. Yeah, for sure.
Compared to his final solo show in 2018, he played 6 songs again that he did, and he left out stuff, Ken, like Charisma. Do You Love Me? Plaster Caster, Long Tall Sally, he was doing at that last show, Sweet Pain, Love Theme from Kiss. Oh, so it's really 15 songs. War Machine, She's So European, and Let Me Go Rock and Roll. He did that. So I forgot to highlight that. My bad. All right. And then I compared that set list to Ace's most recent solo show.
Okay.
And there were 6 songs performed of both of those that match Love Gun, Detroit Rock City, Cold Gin, Shout It Out Loud, Deuce, and Rock and Roll All Night. So
shoot, Ace and Gene ought to get together and form a band.
Ace and Gene are now directly competing for the same market in terms of promoters. If Ace had a passport and was able to do European touring festivals, he would be in there with the same sets that he's been doing, I'm sure. And Gene is now filling that the void.
Why don't they get together and they get a lot more ticket sales if they join together? But
they won't get along.
He'd have to get that approved from Paul first, of course. Anyway.
Yeah, Gene is a businessman before an entertainer, Rick.
You make more money.
That's always a thing. You're going to make more money with more people enjoying your sets because they're getting to hear the same shit that they've heard for the last 8 years on the End of the Road tour because it's Gene Simmons of Kiss. Just like there are more people who are going to go to an Ace show now that they're going to hear the original Spaceman playing those Kiss classics that they love. It's a sad reality. Let's go song by song through this set and say yay or nay. And let's try and go at a fast pace and not get into 5-minute monologues. Deuce, yay or nay, Mark?
Yeah.
Okay. And do fight for your opinion if you feel you need to on it.
Oh, okay. Deuce
is a hell yes for me. If I was at a Gene show, I got to hear Deuce.
I will just say this. Deuce is a great song. He should obviously play it, but it seemed a little underwhelming at this show. It just didn't have the same energy that it normally has, but I do love the song.
Ken, Deuce.
Absolutely, yes.
Everyone should drop a Deuce daily.
Absolutely.
All right. Second song in the set. Ken, War Machine.
More? Yes. I'll say yes for a War Machine, too. Yeah.
Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. War Machine is a Gene standard, in my opinion.
Yep. War Machine, that's a great 1-2 opening punch because you're hitting people with great familiar songs and, hey, performed by a powerful and attractive geriatric. All right. Third song, Detroit Rock City. I'm a hell no on that one. That is so Paul Stanley signature. That should not be in the set, even though it's very identifiable and I'm sure people loved hearing. Mark.
Normally I would say yes, but there's one thing that's very interesting about it. The guy who sang it is definitely going to the school of Gene Simmons because he like forgot half the lyrics, much like Gene does when he sings songs. So he botched it completely on that show. But, it's a good song. I've always loved the song. But unfortunately, this band just doesn't have the same firepower than like his old band did.
Yet. Yeah. First show. Different, no matter how much you've rehearsed. Mm-hmm. Ken, Detroit Rock City.
A no from me. Don't need it.
No, it wasn't all Gene. It was,
the drummer sang one too.
Yeah.
Gene sang the Gene songs, basically.
Yeah, I didn't write down who was singing them from the videos that I was watching. And again, YouTube videos are not the same as being there in the room. All right, Weapons of Mass Destruction. I'm a hell yeah on that. I think it was Val might have said no shit from asshole. And I'm like, hell yes. Just because it's never been performed. I always take it from a historical point of view as well. But now we've heard it live once, maybe it can go. Mark, Weapons.
I think Weapons is a good idea because it's his solo material. That's why I think that's what people wanted to hear. So I say yes.
Ken?
I'll say no, because I would have rather, from that album, I would have rather have had Sweet and Dirty Love.
No. And he's done that before. Well, I guess he's done that before. Ace of Spades, I'm a hell no. I just can't figure, other than Gene needing a break or getting a white deck chair to sit down on for 5 minutes, I just don't see the logic of him even playing a Lemmy song. Mark?
Yeah, he looked uncomfortable doing it. This is the one that the drummer sang. The drummer did a pretty good job doing it. And musically, it wasn't bad, but it just doesn't seem like something that something that Gene should do in his set. And it just, he looked uncomfortable. I don't know.
Ken?
I'll say no to any covers. So Ace of Spades is a no for me. Even though it was okay.
We don't all hate Lemmy. The first thing I do when I go to the rainbow.
Yeah, it's a good song. It's a good song, but no, I want a Gene song.
And my drink of choice these days is a Lemmy. All right, Communication Breakdown. Paul Stanley did that, didn't he?
He did that in 89.
Which
is weird that Gene did it too. I don't get it. What's the deal with that
song? And I'm a hell no on that one as well. Can you?
I'm a no. Definitely no.
If he wants to do an old cover from that time period, pull something out from Mountain, like Mississippi Queen, like one of these songs that we know influenced Kiss songs. Mark, Communication.
Yeah, I didn't dig it. No, I say no.
All right. What do you say to I Love It Loud?
Yes. That is a Gene song through and through. And even though the crowd was a little lackadaisical with the hey bits, but it was still, it's a Gene song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ken?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. A new Gene staple for a long time now.
Oh dear. Matt, I don't know. we're still processing this. We'll get to you later.
A dart at a bunch of songs on a dartboard, and that's what came up,
Yeah, maybe he has a blender. Spit out the set list for me, Siri.
A blender.
Yeah. I'm a heck yeah on I Love It Loud. Obviously, very yeah. Gene signature song.
Sure.
All right, Shout It Out Loud, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, he sings in there as well. It's a split vocal, so, and I think it's probably an easier song to do. Like you said, he gets to share the vocals with somebody else, so it's not just him singing all of it. So I'd say yes.
Yeah, I'm a yes on that. A very signature Kiss song. Again, you're going to hear more Kiss songs in the set list. There's one that most people are going to casually know or enjoy it because it's very poppy. Ken?
Yeah, definite yes on that one. Because I love that song, you know, too. And yeah, it's even half of Gene's vocals. That's you know, great. But that's a classic anthem, so I'll keep that in.
Typo negative, Val? All right. So Rick with he sound checked Mountain. All right. Then there's hope. X-ray eyes. Yes. Too bad it wasn't performed. Oh, wrong window. Notepad. Go away. Love Gun, Mark.
This is a complete, you know, I don't know why he did this sort of thing. Like, why do that? And plus, you know, to do a Paul song, you know, you got to be vocally good. And these guys, like he said, it's early. Maybe they'll get better as the, you know, shows continue. But right now, it just doesn't seem like a good contender for a long time set list.
Yeah. No. People want Logs and Fireplaces, not Loves and Guns. Ken.
Yeah. Shut up and don't play Love Gun. So, no.
Or that's really not nice.
It's don't not really do it. I mean, did Paul influence him on this thing? I was like, oh my gosh. Anyway.
He's been so connected to Paul.
He's brainwashed by Paul.
He was being considerate of Paul. He's like, I'm going out. I'm playing.
Well, Paul wasn't considerate of Gene on his solo tours.
Well, Gregory might have a good point. Gregory Pegg there put his comment up.
Gregory Pegg.
Yeah, he already remembered. Maybe the Gene
could get a Wi-Fi signal and could do X-ray eyes.
I am just start learning your old songs. Okay.
He can play anything as long as he's got a drummer. Oh, wait, sorry, wrong. All right, Calling Dr. Love, Ken.
Absolutely, yes.
I agree with Ken. Absolutely fucking yes. Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is another one of the, you know, stamped Gene Simmons approved. Like, that's his song. That's his baby, for sure.
It's single.
Yep, Calling Dr. Love. Yeah.
Have
Nothing
to.
Needs to be said about that. Same with Cold Gin. Cold Gin's a yes. Am I tired of hearing the Kiss kind of version of it? Yeah, but it's Gene sang it. Ace sings it. It's all good. Kumbaya. Happy families. Mark.
Yeah, Cold Gin. I think it's as. It's kind of a must-have. I mean, I think it's more of a must-have for an Ace show than a Gene Simmons show, but I don't have any issues with Gene doing it.
Good. Ken?
Yeah. Cold Gin, absolutely. Why didn't he do New York Groove? Anyway.
Give him time.
Cold
Maybe he sounds
2,000 Man, sure. Maybe.
Yeah, he can do 2,000 Man.
Maybe he wants to do Tossing and Turning. Done some. Hey,
he could. He likes that stuff. Gene likes that music.
Maybe he'll honor all the members of Kiss, and you know, maybe he'll do something by the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. Maybe
vaccinated with a Victrola.
Doesn't want to get sued. All right, yes. Parasite, Ken.
Absolutely, yes. Love that song. Love the vocal by him. It's always good. It's always a standout. Yes, and you disappeared. Is he there? Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
I thought it like a whack-a-mole. Mark.
Parasite, I give it a yes, and I give it a salute because we talked about Tommy Thayer earlier, and he appeared on this song and played it and played a fantastic version of it. He did a great job. The solo was really well done. He did one little thing where he missed one little part, but other than that, I think it was spot on and it was well done and a reason why he should be given more credit from the Kiss fans.
Yeah.
That's nice, especially after that topic earlier, you know, where people are bashing on Tommy. I was really pleased when I saw that Tommy had been there and had played a couple of songs with him. Again, whether anyone likes it or not, Tommy is eternally part of the KISS family, even if it's only the makeup designs that are ultimately remembered in the long term and not
he's
necessarily
a company man.
Names, not necessarily. He's reliable. Yeah. And again, he plays the stuff well. Ken, did I get your opinion on Parasite?
Yes, I said yes, yes absolutely. Okay, when you disappeared? So
Yes, I disappeared. Sorry. Lick it up. I mean, yeah, I was happy that Tommy showed up, but I'm so fucking over Lick It Up and the little Who jingly bit. Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I know Tommy was on this one too, and he did a good job again, but Lick It Up is just not a song Gene should be playing. I mean, that's so connected with Paul Stanley. I don't think it's a good song for him. No,
people will want to hear it, and they got to hear it, and they can sing along to it.
Yes,
and I can play the solo. All right,
well, there you go. Maybe you should jump on stage. Gene knows you can come over there and play with him one day.
Oh, I can do two solos. If we do I Love It Loud, I can play that as well. I can play
there you go. Thing. Perfect.
Yeah, no to any Paul song. Anyway, Lick It Up to no to Lick It Up. It's tired.
Yes, I agree. Lick It Up's kind of over. It's been done to death. Okay, Are You Ready? Like, again, a song from The Vault. I'm a hell yeah, that should open the set. That should be it. It should
Have
a radioactive intro, an extended of that piped in through the PA, and then kick into Are You Ready? It's the anthem, the KISS anthem that never was. Ken.
Yes, I'm going to say yes to Are You Ready? I like it on The Vault. I thought, man, this is a song that should have been on a KISS record. So for sure, yes on that one.
Mattman H with the hell yeah. Mark, are you the hell yeah or the hell no?
Well, I didn't hear them do this. That's the one video I didn't get to see, but I'm going to assume that they did it well. It's a song that he seems very connected to, and, you know, he seems to like it. He puts it on his, you know, his website and all this stuff. So whenever you hear something that's not KISS related, that song always seems to play. So I think it's a good song for him to play.
I wish the people attached to Gene's website would get some, you know, decently filmed up close video of some of those songs, because again, Are You Ready should be pressed onto a 7-inch vinyl with a B-side.
And with a record store video.
Yeah, record store day for Gene Simmons. If he's not going to put Asshole out on colored vinyl, put out a single of Are You Ready. It really is the lost KISS single from latter era KISS. So I'm very positive about that song. 100,000 Years. Ken.
Yeah, this is the one I could not find. I found a video that said 100,000 years, but it wasn't 100,000 years. It was Let Me Go Rock and Roll. So I have not found 100,000 years out there. But anyway, I would say no, because that's really a Paul deal. And I'd rather have a Gene song stuck in there on that one, too.
You don't want to see Gene attempt his version of The Preacher again? He has worn a collar.
Sure, he has his bass solo thing in there kind of thing, but they could do that on any song if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that bass riff is very kind of signature.
It's a cool bass riff, but I'm not doing it. I'm not going to add it just for the bass riff, no.
Not enough.
Not enough for me.
All right, Ken says nay. Mark?
Yeah, I'm kind of nay on it as well. You know, yeah, it is a cool bass riff and stuff like that. But again, it's a very attached to Paul, this song. And I for some reason, that version on a live one is so embedded in my mind as the quintessential be-all, end-all version. No version of it can ever top it in my mind.
Damn right. Let Me Go Rock and Roll. I'm a yes on that, because it's just a really, really fun song that I enjoy. And live, it usually becomes more of a jam. I don't think I even watched that one yet.
I did.
Still hoping someone recorded that show properly. And we'll put that up on Dime. That'd be very nice. But Let Me Go Rock and Roll is so fun. Mark?
This is the one that I experienced like Ken. It said it was 100,000 years, and it was actually this song. One thing I got to say, and yes, I understand it's a rehearsal and a warm-up show, but again, this is a little bit amateur hour with Gene here, because before they started, you remember this, Ken, where he's like, bass a bit louder. No, yeah. A bit louder. Like, I'm like, why are you doing sound check in the middle of your fucking show? Like, come on, Gene, we've been doing this for how long? And you're going to be doing this. This is like going to a jam night or something now when he starts doing this stuff. Like, just deal with it. Like, just play the fucking song. You played it 100,000 times. You can't play it with the bass slightly louder in your monitor. Give me a fucking break.
He likes to yell. Did he throw a
bottle at his sound man?
No, he didn't do that.
Not yesterday.
Well,
that was after the show.
His hearing is clearly better than Ace's. Ken.
Yeah, really. He could hear it.
Rock and roll.
Yes to loving the rock and roll.
Okay. Yes, for me. I like the live version of that one. It's really, really cool.
All right. I Was Made for Loving You. I'm just a no. And I didn't, because I wear headphones and I work most of the time, I mainly listen to these musically. So I didn't see crowd and I didn't even listen to this one because I just don't want to hear this song again. Hmm. I am in no rush to hear it. Mm-hmm. And having, again, I've already said my bit about having audience on stage, I'm not comfortable with. So I'm a no on I Was Made for Loving You. But I can also understand why it is there as audience participation and also as a hit song from the Kiss catalog. Mark.
Well, I'll keep it short. You heard my long version of this song. I say no. I think bringing up people is amateur night. I've always said it. I don't like when people do that. Besides the fact of what you said about Dimebag, that was a scary thing, because that was a huge Dimebag guy, and never want to see something like that happen again on stage with any musician. And, you know, just play the song. And look at it. It's well known he doesn't like the song, so why play it? I know it's a big song, but there's other big songs. He could have did Christine 16 instead of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are even crazier these days and angrier as well. Mm-hmm. So just keep people in the audience. You are the artist. You are the talent. We are the fans. Yes. There's a line that separates us. Keep it that way, in my opinion. But Ken may not agree. Ken, I Was Made for Loving You.
I Was Made for Loving You. No, definite no. They say that song is about to be eclipse 1 billion plays on Spotify or something like
that. Is it?
Something like that. And I think it's like, man, that song is such a misrepresentation of Kiss, of the music of Kiss. It's just, I don't know. It's it was a good song. It's fine, whatever. But it's just kind of been a fluke song for them, in my opinion. But I got to say no. Yeah, no.
Okay. Last song of the set was, of course, the obligatory Rock and Roll All Night, A Party Every Day. Yeah, it's Kiss's signature. So I have no problem with it. And it's one that everyone ought to be able to sing along to. And Gene can threaten them if they don't sing it well enough. He's going to end the show because it's the set closer anyway.
Yeah. Ken? Yeah, definite yes for Rock and Roll All Night, for sure.
Mark?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I'm sick of the song by now, I think it's a must play. And, you know, I think people will be disappointed if they didn't hear it. So that, more than any other song on his set list, I think would be a disappointment if they didn't hear it.
Yeah, you have all these people coming out of these shows going, "What? Who's Gene Simmons? Who did he play for?"
Exactly.
Oh,
no, there literally are people. All right, so the final part of this question was, dump two songs out of this set list and replace them with two songs. Ken, you are the editor at large for Gene Simmons Incorporated. You are telling Gene that he has got to get rid of two songs out of this set. Which two are you making him dump him? What are you telling him to put in there? Because he listens to people who can say gymnasium.
Yeah. I would definitely get rid of more than two. But anyway, having said that, you know, I'm not letting you. Maybe one Paul Max. But so we'll do the obvious ones. Ace of Spades and Communication Breakdown. So in place of Ace of Spades, I'm going to put in Charisma. And then in place to, and this kind of the rocking version of this next song is, instead of Communication Breakdown, I'm going to put in Going Blind, the electric version.
Interesting.
So you hate Lemmy and Ace by getting rid of Ace of Spades.
I hate them. I hate Led Zeppelin too. But no, I don't hate Led Zeppelin. I really don't hate them. They're okay. But yeah, just those two songs. Take those out.
Okay, Mark. Which two are prime candidates?
I would take out. I would take out "Lick It Up." So sick of that song, and I would also take out "Detroit Rock City." I just don't think they're going to be able to do the justice with it with the people that are involved with it right now. But I think that they should put in, instead of "Detroit Rock City," they should do "It's My Life." He's always done that really well whenever he's played live. And I think it's a good song to do. And I think that he should replace Love Gun with Rock and Roll Hell. When they did that on the cruise, when he sang that, it was really good. And I think that's a song that's very doable with that band. They could do it really well, I think.
Yeah, I'll have to see how this band comes together. It's a different, you know, kind of group. I don't know how much they have played in the Vegas scene or even together as a unit versus the Rock and Roll Residency, which came in as a package that already knew each other pretty well. Even the guys who came in, Christopher Williams on drums and all that, was part of kind of a scene. So they all interacted, you know, very well. I think I'm going to be a little bit pedestrian thinking about that new paradigm I explained from my perspective, that Gene now has to serve a different audience than the Vault crew. Ace of Spades and Communication Breakdown, I have no idea what either of those songs are doing in this set. So they're the ones that are going to go for me as well. And I love Lemmy. I'm going to put Christine 16 in because it is such a highly recognizable Gene Simmons song that I want to see how old he will get before he gets uncomfortable singing that song. and it's probably one of the few songs that he actually has a workable monologue for to intro, because he is not a natural front man, but he's really got a great intro of, this used to be about 16-year-olds and now it's about 60-year-olds. He's got something that kind of works that a lot of the audience who are that age are going to be able to relate to as well, and the youngsters who maybe have no idea why they're there are just going to chuckle politely at. So he's got an intro, and that's important. The other one, I got to put in One Deep Cut. And when I think of some of the songs that he's done well over the years, She's So European, It's My Life, you've already mentioned, I got to go with Charisma. Because it's another one that with just a tiny bit of thought, he would have a great intro for as well, because it is about arrogance. And it is about girls, and it is about everything that was central to his existence in the 70s. That surely he can come up with a really witty intro for, and he does a great job on it. And it's just one that I never get tired of that song. I never have. But we're seeing some great suggestions. New York, New York not being one of them. Naked City is a great suggestion. Got Love for Sale is a great suggestion. Under the Rose is fantastic. Only You. I mean,
that'd be interesting.
She, Ladies Room. You can't do that anymore.
It's a lot of songs.
Yeah, there are so many songs in this wonderful catalog. I mean, well, and that's why I wanted to keep it to you can only replace two and not do a wholesale. Number one, I'm really surprised that he did 18 songs. That's a pretty good length set for first show. And I'll be very interested to see what he does tomorrow night in South America. I can't wait for the European tour. You know, we bitch and moan. No, we don't. We dissect and discuss. And I can't wait to see people's videos from the tour and to listen to them and to check it out and to debate what we would like, what we don't like. Because, again, we're not hating on Gene or Lemmy or Tommy by discussing positives and minuses from our perspective. This is, you know, three guys. Oh, wait, no, I'm not stealing Mike's monologue. The three guys at a bar shooting shit. nearly went there. But for right now, I want to thank everyone who's taken the time to join in on this. I mean, pick your two that you would take out of that set. You know, chime in with your opinion on Tommy, and that I still say it's an asinine topic on the FAQ. We get some gold sometimes, and we get some of those, but they're all worthy of discussion. And mm-hmm. KISS fans will discuss and argue about absolutely everything. That's what makes us a vibrant community that I enjoy being a part of. All right. Thank you for joining us live today. See us on the board. Comment wherever you listen to us or consume this podcast. But for now, from Ken, Mark, and myself, thank you for joining us, and we shall see you next time.
Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the KISS FAQ message board and discuss the topic we broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.
Dump the Paul songs.